The epistle is from Colossians chapter 3, beginning with the first verse. If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth. For you have died, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you will also appear with glory. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you: fornication, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. In these you once walked when you lived in them, but now put them all away: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and foul talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old nature with its practices and have put on the new nature, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Here there cannot be Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free man, but Christ is all and in all. Please stand for the reading of the gospel. The gospel reading is Luke chapter 12, beginning with the 13th verse. One of the multitude said to him, "Teacher, bid my brother divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or divider over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of all covetousness, for a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man brought forth plentifully, and he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there will I store all my grains and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So says he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thank you.
It was about this time of year, maybe 20 years ago, I don't know, Lisa and I had taken our children to Europe for a vacation. We were on the last day. Kids were weary, ready to be home, a little bored. We were on a train. And so I was trying to think how to pass the time. Now, I noticed there was a guy across the aisle from us with a little boy. I would learn later that he was a gypsy. I don't think I'd ever had a conversation with a gypsy before. And he looked like he wanted to talk, but I was just at that point of the trip. I didn't really want to engage anybody, so I averted my gaze. Fine. And to pass the time with my children, I started asking them questions like, "Okay, let's name the U.S. presidents in order." So they started in Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, and so on. "What's the beginning of the Gettysburg Address?" 87. I'm asking a bunch of things. They're doing okay. They're getting annoyed with me a little bit. At about this time, I said, "Okay, name the books of the Bible in order." Now, before Sarah could get the word Genesis out of her mouth, the guy across the aisle, his eyes fly wide open. He stands up and he looks at me and he says, "Are you a Christian man?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "What kind of a Christian are you?" I didn't know the answer to this question. Like, I thought, American Christian, a traveling Christian, a centrist progressive Christian, a Sunday morning Christian. I wasn't sure what to say. So I said, I'm a Methodist Christian. He said, "Oh, I'm sorry." I said, "Why are you sorry?" He said, "Well," he said, "where I come from, The Methodists, they don't take their faith very seriously. It's kind of a matter of convenience. They pray to God only when they're in trouble. It doesn't really impact their lives. They aren't really claimed in their life by Jesus. And I said, oh, we don't have that problem where I come from. It's funny. We're laughing at ourselves here. What kind of a Christian are you? Pretty interesting. He told me about the gypsy church in Europe. It's pretty interesting. If you know anything about Christianity in Europe, it's barely got a pulse, and it's in considerable demise and has been for a long time. And a lot of the grand church buildings in Europe don't have any people in them anymore. They're coffee houses and things like that, right? He told me about that. I said, you know, what's the key to the gypsy church growing so much? He said, oh, we take our faith seriously. It's a lot of sacrifice. He told me this thing. It was interesting. The question has lingered with me. What kind of a Christian are you? In this passage which Don read to us, Paul says, it's so interesting. Paul says, if Christ is raised, and you and I would finish that sentence by saying, we get to go to heaven one day, right? If Christ is raised, we get to go to heaven one day. But that's not what Paul says. Paul says, if Christ is raised, then seek the things that are above instead of the things that are on earth. Have your mind on things that are above instead of the things that are on earth. If Christ is raised, that's pretty interesting. How would you have your mind on things that are above instead of things on earth? I think about, I've told you this before, Dorothy Day, the great saint of the last century. Later in her life, Robert Coles from Harvard came to interview her. He knew she'd written an autobiography when she was younger. He said, I'd love it if you would write down some autobiographical reflections on your life. And she told him she just couldn't do that. She said, because when she looked back on her life, all she could think about was how lucky she had been to have had Jesus on her mind for so long. So maybe having Jesus on your mind. Or I think about, I started a book yesterday written by the theologian Willie Jennings. Willie teaches at Yale. A lot of us know him. He's a friend because he used to teach at Duke. I mean, here's a guy who took a step down in the world. You're at Duke, go to Yale, I don't know. And I'm reading Willie's book called The Christian Imagination. At the beginning of the book, he talks about his parents, who are named Mary and Ivory, and what he says about them is interesting. He says, it'd really be an understatement to say they were devoted to God. He said, actually, it was Mary, Ivory, and Jesus all together, all the time. Like, I love that. Paul talks about our minds being on things that are above, and he says, to get that done, he says, you got to put to death. This is so interesting. He says, for that to happen, it's like you need a mind transplant, you need a heart transplant. He says, you've got to put to death all those things that are normal in American culture, right? So you got to put to death in you greed, covetousness, idle talk, coarse talk. We just hear it all the time, right? But Paul says, no, that's not the way you put that to death. And how would you go about doing this? Like, we need the heart mind transplant. You need to desire these things instead of just, I want to fit in and be like the most American person ever. You got to desire to want to be God's person, which isn't about being normal. Flannery O'Connor said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you odd. So you got to have that dialogue. Like, I want to be strange, because following Jesus will make you a little bit odd. Prayer's needed. Discipline is needed. Yeah, I told you last week, we picked back up on this thing years ago. We gave out these shower tags. I got a few up here if you want one after the service. And we gave these out to everybody, and this has been hanging in my shower for years now. And so every morning when I shower, I pray this prayer. And it says, Lord, as I enter the water to bathe, I remember my baptism. Wash me by your grace. Fill me with your spirit. Renew my soul. And here's the part that's interesting. And then it says, I pray that I might live as your child this day and honor you in all that I do. So what would it mean to have the discipline to honor God in all that we do? Maybe you don't pick up on the crass conversation that people around you are having. Maybe you're always expressing gratitude. Maybe you become more generous. Maybe you turn off things that everybody else has turned on. I don't know. It's a matter of discipline. It's a matter also, this is so interesting. So my gypsy friend, I looked over and I'm kind of trying to size him up. He's a grown man. He's got this little boy with him. And he's got books that look like learn to read books. So I said to him, I said, are you teaching your son to read? He said, oh no. He said, gypsies don't read. I said, well, you got these learn to read books. What are you doing? He said, I'm trying to learn to read. And I said, why are you trying to learn to read? He said, well, he said, gypsies don't read. He said, but a lot of gypsies, when they get converted to Christianity, they want to learn to read. I said, why do they want to learn? I'm going on this path. I shouldn't go there. I said, why do they want to learn to read? He said, well, what else? They want to read the Bible. He said, why else would you want to read? I kind of leaned over and covered up the novel that I had. Didn't have a Bible on me, you know, like, yeah, I got that. This is the time of year we lobby you to be in a Bible study. And I know you go like, yeah, nice activity, Bible study. This is really wrong. Willie Jennings, again, talking about his parents, Mary and Ivory, he said, it's not so much that they knew their Bible. He said, they know themselves and their world through the Bible. Like, we're trying to make sense of life and everything. And the Bible's how we make sense of it. And there's so much in it that's absolutely, I mean, I'm 63 years old. I got a PhD in Bible. And I keep being amazed. I read it and I find something that's fresh and invigorating and joyful in it. It's this astonishing lifelong adventure. I want to be like that gypsy using my, you see, what happens is the world says to us, be cynical and then engage in your diversions, right? Get cynical, even apathetic about the world, and then enjoy your diversions. Go have a drink. Go to a movie. Watch TV. Play around. You know what I'm saying? The world says this, and it's not that that's wicked or anything, but the Bible, God, for our mind is on things above, God doesn't call us to be cynical and enjoy our diversions, but instead, God calls us to have some hope, have some courage, make some sacrifice. Do something hard for God. Let me talk about this thing coming up. And be patient with me. Don't get mad at me. But let me just say it. I went to bed last night, as many of you did, I'm sure, and I couldn't. It's so hard to fall asleep. I kept thinking about this news out of El Paso, right? There's this shooter. It's killed 20 people. Others injured. And I went to bed. And what I didn't know was what I heard when I woke up this morning is that not even another day has passed, and there's a shooting in Dayton. 9 are dead, others are injured. And I thought about that in being with you this morning, and it occurred to me that two things are going to be going on this morning, and neither one is of God. We just have to name it. So one is this. This is not my main interest, but I think this is right. Is I'm sure this morning, good Christians from the NRA are going to say guns aren't the problem. And they've got a good point in that guns aren't the only problem. Mental health in our country is a problem. Movies, TVs, media culture with so much violence, that's like a huge problem. But I mean, how can you say guns aren't a problem? Because you don't have mass knifings, you don't have mass strangulations, but you do have mass shootings. But that's not my main thing. Here's what I'm interested in. I'll guarantee you, Christian people all day today, this is not bad, but I want us to get beyond this. Christian people today, when you hear about a mass shooting, we're kind of numb, and then we say this thing. We say, our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of the victims. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of the victims. And let me say to you, we got to do better than that. First of all, thoughts never go to the families of the victims because the victims don't know you or what your thoughts are. That's something you can do. You might want to do this. This week, when you find the names of the victims, look up their addresses and send them a note and say, we at Myers Park United Methodist Church care about you. We are hurting with you. We are so sorry for what happened. We will pray for you. That's how they would know. And then our prayers go out to the families of the victims. Prayers don't go out to families of anybody. Prayers go to God. And I'm pretty sure about this that I'm about to say. When there's a mass shooting and we pray, I'm positive God doesn't say, oh, thank you for your prayer. And I'm pretty sure God doesn't say, oh, thank you for your prayer. Because of your prayer, I'm going to do something magical and there won't be any more shootings in this country. I'm pretty sure when we pray, God says, well, thank you for your prayer, but do something. Do anything. You argue about what's the right thing to do, but then you don't do anything. God's thinking there's carnage in the streets. My children are having to live in the okay corral, and it grieves my heart more than it grieves yours. Do something. Change things. Have a little courage. Have a little sacrifice. Have a little hope. You see, this thing goes on in our society. I don't know if you saw it. I was watching the Democratic debates the other night. That was a, it's just me. This isn't the preacher. This is just James talking. I thought that was a sorry episode. They're bickering over policy, and there was one person who spoke some truth. And that was Marianne Williamson. And I'm not saying Marianne Williamson ought to be president of the United States, but she spoke truth the other night, because you know what she said? She said, there are false gods at the core of our society, and it makes everything toxic. She said, until we expose those false gods at the heart of our society and deal with the toxicity that is at the heart of American society, it won't matter who wins the election. It won't matter which policy gets implemented. America will still be a sick place. That's absolutely the truth. Here's the way false gods work. My gypsy friend, he told me all these amazing things about the growth of the church and among gypsies. And he said to me, he said, it's hard if you're a gypsy to become a Christian. And I said, why is it hard if you're a gypsy to become a Christian? He said, well, most people have to change what they do for a living. Never heard of that. Have you heard of that in America? Because of becoming a Christian, you got to change what you do for a living? I said, tell me more about that. He said, well, he said, the number one occupation among gypsies is fortune teller. He said, but once you convert to Christianity, you can't be a fortune teller anymore because it's not real. So you got to quit being a fortune teller and you got to find another job. I thought about that. And I thought about my people back home. This is not you guys. I was thinking of my people in Davidson back then. And I thought, I don't know one of them who was a fortune teller. But I could think of hundreds of them who are fortune makers. And I wonder about God and fortune makers. What does God ask of fortune makers? I read this theologian a while back who said that when we pass the offering plate every week, on the one hand, you're collecting money, but he also said it's kind of a test. It's a test of who is your God? Is it God, or is it, you know, the money says, in God we trust. Does that become our God? So it's a little test. It reminded me of, read a book recently about the Kennedy family, you know, the Jack Kennedy, all those guys. So the matriarch of the family was Rose Kennedy. She's the mother of Jack, Bobby, Ted, so on. And she was adamant as mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, you go to church every Sunday. You just have to go to church every Sunday. So they went every Sunday, and she said, you always contribute to the offering every Sunday. This seems like a good parental lesson, except as her children, grandchildren, nieces, whoever would sit next to her in church, they would watch her, and when the offering plate would come by, she would put money in. She would put a $1 bill in every Sunday. So she's like checking it off, but I would say to you, she was flunking the test. She was flunking the test. Money. Jesus tells a story about money. It's hard to talk about it. It's like you have a good joke and you have to explain it to somebody. It's not funny any longer. If you're trying to understand a frog, if you dissect the thing, the frog's dead, of course. Jesus tells this amazing story about a man. He's doing great. He's making ever more money, and he's got great barns, but he thinks to himself. He's talking to himself. He's in his own mind, and he thinks, I'm going to tear down my barns and build bigger barns, and then I can have my rest. I mean, it sounds like he's doing, like, this is the plot of what you're supposed to do in America. He's got better barns. He's going to take his rest and enjoy himself. And then in Jesus' story, God says, you fool, today your life is required of you. What good will all that do you? This conversation goes on in our heads. I don't know about you, I have a conversation in my head a lot of the time about money. And it's a conversation I'm trying to grow in, but it's hard because we live in this world. So the conversation that goes on in my head, I don't know about you, the money that goes in my head, I have this conversation about money. So I say things like, money isn't everything. But then I add a, yeah, but. Or I'll say, my money doesn't define my worth. Then I think, I don't know. Or I'll say, I've got enough money. But then I think about the other guy. I don't know. What if I run out? I have this conversation all the time. Is that my whatever? And so what the Howells try to do, let me just talk about this. This is light years from a brag. I just want to tell you as one Christian what we try to do to save our own souls with respect to this. And what the Howells do, we decided when we got married that we would always do this. We have two disciplines. One is we would always tithe 10%. Of our income. We don't mess around with pre-tax, post-tax, we don't do any of that. Just 10% of whatever money comes our way, including my mother died last year, that was a small inheritance, gonna tithe that. We always give 10% of whatever we earn to the church. And here's the complicating factor, is that we decided every year we would give a little more to the church than the year before. That was like a great plan until my daughter Sarah enrolled at Duke University. Oh, this is going to be hard. And nothing changed. We don't do that because there's a church budget that needs our money. I don't care about the church budget. The senior pastor can't say, I don't care about the church budget. Sorry. Of course I care about the church budget. But I don't give because of the church budget. I give because I love God, and God's been amazing to me, and I love God's church and the work of God's church, so I don't really care where the budget is. We give to the church. Nothing changes it. I got in the mail yesterday my new tax bill for my house. That's not going to change what my and I'm not bragging on this. We're trying to save ourselves, and God's working. Do I care about the church budget? Yes, I care about the church budget. So there's this thing going on. We had a finance meeting the other night. Everybody's wringing their hands. Because we do this thing, I don't know if you know this is a church. We start the year pretty even, and then it gets like through the summer, it's like, ugh. And then, like, December 1st, there's like a rocket takes off, and like, whoa, and we made it. It's amazing. High drama, really exciting every year. And my finance people are always nervous, and always like, we'll make it at the end. Always do that. But, you know, this year, we're in the biggest hole we've ever been in. And I don't know why. You know, some people have said, we're not given because of the denomination. I get that, but this is my view. You may not know this. Our church is looked to all across our denomination as one church that does this thing really well, which is we have conservatives, we have progressives, we love each other, we're a strong church, we're doing God's work in the world. Our denomination does not need a weaker Myers Park church. We need a strong Myers Park church. It's what we need. And we have this thing, and we just forget, don't we, that you know, we said the Bible's clear. Well, one of the things that the Bible's clear about is Jesus says, don't lay up treasure on earth. We're masters at laying up treasure on earth. And that's the reason, as best I can tell, that our church is behind on money. Because at the end of the day, if we loved God and loved God's work through the church, this just would not be a conversation point at all. I'm not scolding anybody. When Jesus says, don't lay up treasure on earth, he's not scolding anybody. He wants to set people free. He knows how money can work this thicket in your soul, and there's so much joy in giving, being part of God's work. Thomas Merton said this, if you have some money, consider that maybe the only reason God allowed it to fall into your hands was in order that you might find joy and perfection by giving it away. Let me close with this. We're bringing, last night, Lisa and I went out to dinner with another couple, and we had a great time, and I paid for it. You know, I was like, big dad here. Like, I'll pay for it. I was cool. I love doing that. It's great fun. And whatever that was, that's like a good use of my money, right? Because I did that. But then think about it, like, what's money for? Paul says the love of money is the root of all evil. I preached a sermon this years ago where I thought about that. Like, God wants us to love our money. God wants you to have proper love of your money. It's like, if you love your child, what you want isn't that you control your child and you keep it at home forever. If you love your child, you want your child to grow up and find their purpose in the world. Same thing. If I have some money, I want to love it in a way that it finds its true purpose in the world. The dinner was cool, but I thought about this. Greg Boyle's coming, right? Tomorrow night, and you should come to this, 6:30 downtown. He's just one of the most amazing speakers in all of Christendom, but more importantly, he's done the most amazing stuff that is so important in our society, because he works with people that are in gangs. Now, if you want to talk about scary people in the United States of America, gang members, a lot of them, they're just kids. They're just 14, 17. They're in gangs, they're committed to violence and hatred. I mean, if you want tough people to work with. And Greg Boyle works with gang members, and he has this ministry, and they get out of the gangs, and they work on their Christian faith, and get a new life, and they get a job. It's just incredible what he gets done. And that's got to somehow be part of what we need in our violent society. Like, if you can deal with gang members, maybe that's part of how you deal with all this other anger and all. Anyway, he tells a story that I absolutely love. There's a guy in his program named Louie. Louie was in a gang and became part of Father Boyle's program, and he was doing really well, but he was kind of a whiner and a complainer. You know these kinds of people. So he was in Father Boyle's office one day, and he said, Father, can I have a blessing? And Boyle said, oh, sure, yeah, you know the routine. So Louie came over, and he bowed his head, and Father Boyle put his hands on his shoulders. And just he remembered right then that it was Louie's birthday. And he said, oh, Louie. He said, I forgot, man. Happy birthday. And then he said this to a gang teenager. You know, Louie, I'm proud to know you. And my life is richer because you came into it. When you were born, the world became a better place. I am proud to call you my son, even though, and he said, I don't know why I added this, even though at times you can really be a huge pain in the word begins with A, ends in S, cannot be said out loud by the preacher in church. Louie looked up, smiled, and said, feelings mutual, which I love. It was right after Christmas, so he asked Louie, what did you do for Christmas? Louie said, well, I invited 6 friends over. I got a turkey. We cooked it ghetto style. He's describing all of this. And Father Boyle said, who are the 6 guys? He named them, and Father Boyle recognized their names as being members of warring gangs in Los Angeles. People committed to hate one another. Louis pulled them together to cook this turkey at Christmas. Bull said, what could be more sacred than 7 orphans, enemies, rivals, sitting in a kitchen waiting for a turkey to be done? My family was on that train, and as we pulled into the station there in London, I was trying to think how to say goodbye to this gypsy. He'd been so amazing. I figured we wouldn't be able to stay in touch. But he came over, and he'd written something on a piece of paper, and he handed it to me. He said, I don't know what plans you have for tonight. He said, but, I've come here. We're going to have the service tonight, and here's the address. I'd love it if you would come. He said, we're going to sing some hymns. It's really joyful. We love singing, and we're going to read the Bible, and we're going to talk about what God's asking of us. He said, I would just love it if you guys would come. And I said, thank you. And I did not tell him what I had promised my children. I'd promised my children that when we got off that train, we were going to get a bite to eat, and then we were going to go see the movie that was out in the theaters then called Scooby-Doo. What kind of a Christian are you?